Hello, and welcome to the Line to Mastery. It's an honor to share this episode with you. In this episode, I am joined by my dear sister, Jalene Novotny. Jalene is a biodynamic farmer, a regenerative agriculturist, and a movement maker in the local Austin food scene. She focuses on connecting the local community with farmers and ranchers, as this is the most sustainable and regenerative way for us to connect with our food. When we understand the relationship and energy that goes into procuring our own food, it makes a massive difference in what we consume and how we feel after consuming that food, that energy that becomes us. We talk about her journey into regenerative agriculture, the farm we have been creating and working on since March, all of the holistic pieces that go into the ecosystems that we have been creating, how she and I got connected through Fit for Service, and the importance of letting nature take her course as much as possible when it comes to farming and agriculture. At the time of recording this intro, Jalene and I are coming off of a powerful weekend in Seattle, seeing Odessa live for the first time in 3 years. The show was absolutely amazing. It was like going to church. I think my favorite reaction from Jalene is as we were getting started with the show and Odessa was coming on and we were like a song and a half into it, she like her eyes were just so big and she was just blown away. And she was like, this is what we're doing. This is what we came to Seattle for. And it's like, yeah, Jay, this is it. We're at church. And I'm just feeling so inspired and driven and motivated to pursue my dreams and the callings of my soul in the form of music production and space creation and creating just beautiful environments for people to come and experience life and what it means to be a human being. So with that being said, I would like to share something that I've been working on that's been really special to me, and I've been pouring a lot of time, a lot of energy, a lot of money into my first retreat called Lapicero. And Lapicero means pencil in Spanish, and for us, that's the call for those that are writing their own story and ready to take on the next chapter, self-author it, and be in community and tribe that are also self-authoring their own story. So I'm not going to share all the details of Lapicero with you all right now. If you're interested, go ahead and DM me on Instagram or Facebook, whatever works. The dates are November 17th through the 21st. We have a 75-acre ranch in Wimberley, Texas, just outside of Austin. All the food is going to be locally sourced by Jalene, so we're going to have the highest quality food that we have access to here in Austin. We're going to have esoteric food experiences, a medicine ceremony, slack lines, yoga, music workshops, a lot of play, a lot of parasympathetic nervous system work, a lot of connecting with dope human beings and tribe. And the vision is that everybody walks away with at least one friend that ends up changing their life in some form. So there's a lot of magic being cultivated over the course of this year, and it's an honor to pour my love into my first retreat, Lapicero. So once again, if you feel called, go ahead and shoot me a message on Instagram or Facebook. And without further ado, here is Jalene Novotny. Welcome to the podcast, Jalene Novotny.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
I'm so happy you're here. This is the first podcast I've recorded since February, and it's like almost mid-July now. So it's been crazy. It's been a minute. And right now, I can't think of a better guest to have on the podcast and rejoin me in some conscious, beautiful, powerful conversation. I know we were riffing a little bit on what we want to talk about. I think a lot of it's going to be flow and off the cuff, and I'm excited because whatever is going to come out of this conversation is going to be magical.
Magical. Always.
Yeah. So I imagine just about all of my audience has no idea who you are and what you do. So let's just start there. Who are you? And what do you do?
Great question. I'm Jalene. I go by Regenerative Renegade in my side business. So that kind of sums up a lot of who I believe I am in the world. So really passionate about regenerative agriculture, really passionate about healing our ecosystems, and moving to Austin, I've just gotten more and more passionate about the local food scene. So it started out really big picture with just kind of what is the global economic and environmental picture look like. And over the years, as I've gotten more and more diving into farmers and visiting with ranchers and getting my hands in the dirt, it's really become clear to me that the local food system is how we can make the most impact and change the most. And that's ultimately what's going to be the most sustainable and the most regenerative, because you know where it's coming from and your engagement with your food system goes so much beyond just like the money that you put into buying the product. It's really like the relationships that you're building. It's the energy that you're putting into procuring your food. It's the energy that that whole process is giving back to you. So that's something that I really strive to cultivate in my own life, is like the entire experience of procuring your food is one that should fill your life. I mean, how we used to get our food, that took up, you know, 80 to 90% of our day. And so that's something that, you know, not everyone can do, but the closer you get to growing your own food, raising your own animals, the more you realize that that whole experience is what is feeding you and nourishing you, not just physically, but mentally, spiritually, emotionally. So that's what's really driven me in the past couple years. But to go back to kind of how I got into regenerative agriculture in the first place, I was always into fitness. I played sports growing up. My brother was in sports. My family was a big sports family. So that was kind of how I stayed active, how I stayed healthy. And then I went to college and didn't play sports in college. So it was kind of like, what is like the adult version of staying healthy and staying active? And so I just kind of, Emily Schrohm, shout out to my favorite, like fitness influencer. She is kind of what got me on the track of just listening to podcasts about where our food comes from, where our meat comes from, how do we procure that meat? Is it good for the planet? Is it good for the environment? All of that stuff. And through her podcasts, I stumbled upon Alan Savory and the Savory Institute. And that was one of the first seeds that were planted in me reading his book, Holistic Management. It just made so much sense. It painted the picture of the predator-prey relationship that used to exist between like large herds of animals and the predators that were after them. So like bison in the plains and wolves chasing after them, and this like herd movement that used to have happened before we really civilized like all of the territory. So it started making a lot of sense. Like, yeah, okay, you know, these large herd animals have been around for millions, if not billions of years. And now here we are trying to blame cattle for climate change. And that just didn't make a whole lot of sense to me. So diving down into sort of that Alan Savory's methods is really what painted the picture for me of like, we need to be focusing on the soil. We need to be focusing on getting our food system and our agricultural industries as close to the natural evolutionary processes as possible. And so, yeah, I don't have a background in agriculture. I just started reading this stuff in my spare time. I got really into it, just kept reading and diving down the rabbit hole. A culmination of kind of my old job not being very fulfilling, some other life transformations, like needing to move, needing to decide if I was going to stay in this current job or not. It all kind of culminated into, okay, I don't want to stay in this job. I need to do something. I want to pursue my passion. And ultimately, I'm passionate about regenerative agriculture. And not knowing exactly what that meant at the time, I knew I was just going to be going into a big phase of curiosity and inspiration and just kind of learning as much as I can. And I had read a lot in the like previous 2 years before actually quitting my job. So I was like, I need to get hands-on. I just need to go learn in the field and see what the deal is. So I quit my job. I decided to do a wilderness survival training course. And then the plan after that was to do a farm internship, and just that was going to be kind of my gap year to get me into farming. But the wilderness survival course was ultimately just shifted my perspective on like the way that I lived my life in general. So it was beyond agriculture. It was like everything that you do in your life and all of the products that you use and everything that sustains you ultimately comes from nature. And we used to have the skills to know how to do those things on our own. We weren't dependent on buying from Amazon or just this dependency of being a consumer. We had a lot more skills and a lot more knowledge of the world around us. So that opened my eyes immensely. It definitely piqued my interest more in hunting and like being the one to really procure my own food. I originally thought I'd maybe do like project management at a regenerative agriculture company. Like I still had this thought in my head that like I would sort of be separate from actually doing the hands-on work. But then getting hands-on in the wilderness, it was just like, wow, this feeds my soul in such a way that I never could have expected. Waking up every day and going out into the woods and learning about the plants that were around me, learning how they grew, learning the seasonality of what they could provide for you. You know, one plant, if you were using it in the summer, you would be utilizing its flowers for medicine. But if you were using it in the fall, you might be using its leaves to eat. Or that same plant, if you found it in the winter, you could use its tubers and its roots for food and sustenance. Or if it was a dried stalk, you could use that stalk for making a fire or for making cordage. And so it was just this like whole new world of, I don't even know how the world works. Like everything that I learned growing up was just almost not, you know, somewhat not reality. Like this is reality. These things around me are reality. And this is just so viscerally feeding my soul in a way that nothing else ever could have. So that was the big shift. And then I worked on a farm during the pandemic. So I got to really see from the inside kind of the disruption that the pandemic had on a lot of the farms in our area. And we were a young farm, so we were able to like build a website pretty easily and go e-commerce like fairly easily. But tons of farmers around us couldn't do that. They were good at growing food and raising animals and being on the land. They didn't have all of the marketing skills and website building skills to just go online. And I think it really showed to everyone, and particularly me, because I was living on a farm at the time, like the cracks in our global industrial supply chain. So I happened to be really fortunate because I was living on this rural farm during the pandemic. But all of my friends and family that I was talking to were having struggles. And so I really got to experience the contrast of like, I feel safe here relatively. I know that I have what I need because I'm on this farm, and other people didn't feel that way. So that just really got my gears turning. I started to understand that the problem was kind of bigger than I thought. It was something that didn't exist. So it wasn't like I could just really go find a job that I wanted. It was like the job had to be created. We had to create these new systems. So I had known that I had followed some people in Austin, like Anthony Gustin and Monsel Denton and some of these influencers who were talking about this stuff, who I'd learned from. And I knew they were in Austin, and I knew that Austin was a hub of entrepreneurs, a hub of people who were creating new things and starting new businesses. And I just knew that what I felt like we needed in the world for regenerative agriculture and for our food systems, like needed to be created. So, yeah. And then I came to Austin and, now I'm doing all the regenerative agriculture things. I work on a ranch with you, as you know. And that's been a beautiful experience. I'm sure we'll dive into more. And I also have a side hustle. It's called Regenerative Renegade. So I have built a lot of relationships with local farmers and ranchers originally just for my own kind of, that's the food that I want. That's where I wanted to get my food from. And, you know, there's a lot of types of currency and resources. And we often only think about our financial resources, but there's, you have resources in other ways. So I think one of my skills and ways that I can gather more resources is building relationships. If you have a tight relationship with someone, they're gonna help you out and you're gonna help them out and you're gonna have this reciprocal relationship. So through that, through having relationships with farmers and ranchers, I started sourcing from them and building a farm box with grass-fed local meats, raw milk, bone broth, and I distribute that to people in the city, our friends and fam in the city. So all things food system, all things just procuring your food in the most natural way as possible and just trying to heal the land and regenerate the soil so that we can sustain for generations.
Yeah, we need it.
We need it.
We need it. We need the soil, we need the animals, we need the plants, and we need them to all work in unison with each other. And the bees and the insects, like, we need it all.
Yeah.
You take any one piece out of the system and it completely messes up.
Yeah. And you start to have so much more appreciation for the spider that's in your house or the wasp that is annoying. Like, you recognize that it's all part of the ecosystem and you start to learn and like speak its language. And I think that's something we're missing as a society largely is like speaking the language of nature. Because it is so different than our go, go, go kind of commodity mindset. It takes a little bit of slowing down. It takes patience. It takes an ability to kind of sit with the chaos and let things emerge and not have so much control or so much grip over like every aspect. You have to like just create the space for nature to take her course. You don't need to control every aspect of it.
And be willing to get a little dirty.
Yeah, pretty dirty. There's definitely some trials and tribulations. I mean, you know about that. Just chucking hoses over your back and digging in the mud. And that's all we're doing out here. So it's not all, you know, when I first started, I think it definitely was the animals. I love animals. So that drew me to agriculture. But the deeper I go, it's like, it's fucking hard ass work. But that's part of what feeds your soul. That's part of the satisfaction that you get. And I think that's been one of my biggest takeaways that like keeps motivating me down this path is like the person I've become through all of those struggles. I would never be as resilient as I am now if I hadn't gone through those struggles. So it's worth it. And I think that's part of, what really keeps me coming back to it and keeps me motivated. Even when I can see the hard path ahead, it's like, I know that this will craft me into a better person no matter what.
Yeah, absolutely. And it just like, it pays off, you know, it's not like who you get to become in the process, but like, it's what's being produced and created that's nourishing yourself, those that you love and your community around you.
Yeah. You're like, my pain is being alchemized into food. Something amazing. Yeah. Food.
Yeah. It's beautiful. So maybe this is a good time to just talk about the ranch that we're on.
Yeah. So, yeah. Have you spoken about the ranch at all on your podcast? Does anybody really know? Like,
the ranch didn't exist.
Okay. Yeah. February.
Yeah. Okay. The last time I recorded a podcast.
Cool.
I knew in December that I was going to come out to the ranch when they were first getting started in March. But no, I hadn't talked about the ranch on the podcast. I also didn't really know that much about the ranch.
Yeah.
I just knew that Chad Johnson, who has stayed under Sepp Holzer, was the man to learn from, according to Kyle Kingsbury.
He's the wizard, for sure.
Yeah, so I came out with no expectations, but just knowing that things would work themselves out. And yeah, here we are, like 4 or 5 months later.
I think that's my similar experience. I had no idea what I was really getting into. I'd worked with Kyle a little bit. He knew that I did the farm box and that I was into regenerative ag and that I knew some local farmers. And when I heard that they acquired this property, I just said, hey, I'm really interested in being involved. I'd love to help however possible. And he said, come on out. And that's pretty much, I came out and that's how it got started. We're out here on a ranch in Lockhart. It's 118 acres. We got a lot going on, but the first thing we started with is a really large permaculture install. So yeah, Chad Johnson is the design engineer and installer for the permaculture design. He studied under Sepp Holzer, and sort of their main philosophies are around these self-sustaining food forests. So high diversity, high volume food forests with symbiotic relationships with plants.
And water. Yeah. That's one of the biggest pieces.
Yeah, holding the water. So we dug out, we excavated a huge pond right in the middle of our food forest.
Spiral pond. Yeah, shape's important.
Yeah, Chad's really into the esoteric aspects and like what the shapes kind of bring into the land and how it, you know, the patterns of nature, like definitely. There's spirals in nature, yeah. Fibonacci sequence, all of that stuff.
The aesthetics too. I think he just wants it to be like as pretty as possible.
Yeah. Cause that's what's going to draw people in and be curious and ask questions. And it's really about that whole experience. It's a holistic experience, right? So how visceral can it get? How many of your senses can be engaged in the space? So he does a really good job with that. Permaculture was newer to me. Like I said, I really kind of dove in more to Alan Savory and like Richard Perkins and people who talked a lot about rotational grazing and using cattle to restore the soil and create that network, increasing organic matter in the soil, sequestering carbon into the soil. And through all of these systems functioning appropriately, the water cycle is going to enhance. Your soil is going to be able to store more water. It's supposed to be like a sponge. So it's supposed to have a ton of water in the soil. The plants are this network that will release water and absorb water when it's needed. If there's drought, it's going to, you know, hold on to it more. If it's flowing, it's going to flow to the plants that need it. So this install is kind of just doing all of the work that, you know, would be done over 10 years, 20 years, hundreds of years, and like using the machinery that we have, using the technology that we have in an appropriate way to like reinvigorate the soil, reinvigorate the land, get the water where it needs to go, get the plant life planted, and then kind of letting nature take its course so that you then don't have to do that work anymore. You're not relying on using machinery. You're just doing it up front to, fix what we've kind of messed up over the last 50 to 100 years. So, Sepp has a really good quote that is like, you can't fix the damage that we've done with a spade. So while hand farming and a lot of the other principles in regenerative agriculture are about kind of, you know, low disturbance, that's ultimately what we're doing in the long term. But in the upfront short term, like we need big changes that make a big impact because we've done a lot of degradation as a society. So I really appreciate that aspect. And, I think we've just been able to see with our eyes the transformation that, you know, we're on 118 acres out here and we have plans for doing a lot more. We're going to bring cattle out here this week, actually, and start getting our hands dirty with
practicing rotational grazing and practicing some of these other regenerative techniques. But we've been able to see the difference on just these 5 acres where we have this permaculture garden of the ecosystem that now exists in there compared to the rest of the property. Like, you go in there and we've seen what, like 5 different species of frogs, 5 different species of dragonflies.
It's like 8.
8 different species of dragonflies.
Yeah, where it was 2 before.
Yeah.
We were out there and there just before we started holding the water and planting and just like things were thriving. Yeah, yeah. It was like 2 species of dragonflies.
Yeah.
And yeah. Then we got 6 beehives, so that's really helping all the flowers pollinate. And yeah, it's just, it's making things pop off. We got the chickens. Our turkeys just turned a month old
yesterday. Thousands of trees. Yeah, so like the 5 acres of the food forest, that micro ecosystem is vastly different from the rest of the ecosystem around it. So we've been able to like literally witness, and I think that that's the one of the benefits of using this heavy machinery and using kind of SEPS principles, is a lot of people are still really skeptical. Like, we don't know, we haven't experienced this like nature really thriving. Like, most of us aren't gardeners or farmers or ranchers or wilderness outdoors people. Like, it's something that is hard for us to grasp and hard for us to like wrap our minds around until we experience it. And so while things like raising cattle and rotating them and some of these other regenerative practices do work, they take a lot longer time, and it requires people to like have a significant amount of faith and trust and commitment to see that long picture. But this way, it shows you the principles work right away. And it takes a large amount of resources to do what we did here, but I think it just like, we're all pretty convinced at this point, right? Like, we know it's going to be hard. We know that there's going to be obstacles, but like, we see what it can do. We know that this works.
Yeah. I mean, we're already seeing how much this land has changed in 5 months and how things are working. And while there have been some difficulties, and it seems like the weeds are pretty rampant right now, and you gotta, yeah, you're weeding every single day. Sometimes it feels like all day. We already have food, you know. We've been able to get delicata squash, zucchini, 2 different types of cucumbers, watermelon. Yeah, all within like 5 months of from beginning to where we are now.
Yeah. And less than that.
Yeah, 3 months probably.
Yeah. Yeah, it was crazy. And we didn't, yeah, I don't think any of us really expected that. So I think that that's something that's really powerful in the shift that we're going to try to make. I think especially like having, you know, I have sort of like a broad understanding of different players in the regenerative movement, different tactics, their different modalities. And I really see how SEP and Chad Johnson and these large permaculture installs like can be at least the first like, yeah, thing that people see that are like, okay, this works. Now I can invest some more time and money in these other methods that might take longer because I've seen it work with my own eyes. Because a lot of people, you know, they'll say, yeah, let's do a farm. Let's do this rotational grazing, and they'll start doing the work, but they don't have the appropriate tools or measurements or, ability to speak nature's language to be convinced that it's working. And it is a lot of work. It takes a lot of money. So you could see how it would be easy for people to kind of get cold feet before what this long-term process, you know, before it starts to take root.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I've been amazed by, this as an ability to like show people, quickly what can be done.
Yeah. And we're so fortunate out here because like one, we have Chad Johnson, who's like masterminding a lot of, the food forest, and we just get to pick his brain. So we have a master, right, that we get to learn from. And then we also have a, like, the person that's investing it has the money to actually make things happen. So things happen quick around here. And I feel like there's a lot of farms and people that want to create something like this, but the funds just aren't there. And it takes a lot more time. Whereas, like, the money is there here, and we've been able to just accelerate things so quickly.
Yeah. I mean, it's really a dream project. It definitely, yeah, every day we move down this path, I feel more and more excited about the impact that this really can make. And just being, you know, I mean, that's what brought me to Fit for Service in general and appealed to me about Aubrey Marcus. I actually didn't know anything about Aubrey before joining Fit for Service. I was on this regenerative path. I had just gotten off the farm that I was living on in central Washington, and this was 2020, so it was still like mid-pandemic, and I had no idea what I was going to do. I had no plan for after getting off the farm. I had originally had a plan, but the pandemic really shifted all of that. So I had kind of thought that Austin was the place. That seed was still planted in my head, but no, I didn't know anybody here. I had no friends here. I have no family. I didn't really see how I was going to get there. And I happened to know about Zach Bush, who's kind of in the regenerative world. And he was on a podcast with Aubrey. And in that podcast, they were talking about very big picture, but, you know, what's needed. They were talking kind of about how I remember Zach saying, like, we need to start creating these islands of sanity, I think, or Charles Eisenstein, Zach Bush, they kind of both use those terms. But like, where are the spots that are pushing the edges and aren't just listening to the narrative, and where people can go and be like, oh my gosh, you know, this is possible.
Yeah, there's another way.
There's another way. And they were in that, you know, Aubrey talks about that in a lot of aspects, but this one was pretty specific to like agriculture and how we can do that on the land and how we can heal the land. And, you know, that's what made me join Fit for Service. And I think that aspect of like rebellion in a sense and like pushing the edges is something that Aubrey really stands for and something that I know is needed for the change that we want to make. So that's what really drew me out here. And so it's amazing to know, like, you have to have someone that just stands so strongly in their beliefs and their values to push in this movement, because there's a lot of pushback. There's a lot of people that don't want this to happen. There's a lot of incentive to keep us just doing what we've been doing, to keep the corporations being the ones feeding us. So I almost think that, yeah, I mean, I call myself regenerative renegade because I think that renegade aspect like almost is required to make the changes that we need to make, because you are doing something that is counter to the normal culture. So you have to be going against the narrative. You have to be able to kind of stand on your own sometimes until you get those other people on board and find your tribe. But yeah, that's something that I think Aubrey is really good at. And I'm really grateful that he has the faith and the strength and the resources to put towards this mission.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. It's been just like so amazing to witness this whole like orbit that he has. And what's created from that, and not even just like what he physically is creating, but the type of people that are coming together just kind of through like what he's doing, and then how that's rippling out and creating so much more beyond just what even Aubrey is capable of doing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the more beautiful things about Fit for Service is like, it's not even these coaches or like any of the workshops that you do, but it's like the people and the connections and the bridges that you get to build.
Yeah. It's like the ecosystem.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what's really interesting to parallel to what we're trying to create. It's like, we're, you know, the people who are farmers and ranchers, like, ultimately our job is to just hold space and hold these containers for this emergence to occur. And so it's really beautiful to know that, you know, even though Aubrey, you know, from what I know about him, doesn't have a lot of obvious, like, certainly not farming experience, but even like, you know, maybe living in nature experience, it's pretty clear that he can speak that language to a certain extent, because that's really what he's good at. He just creates these spaces for this emergence to happen and for this like entire ecosystem to take on a life of its own. So, that's exactly what we're trying to do on lands. We're creating ecosystems. We're not just growing a crop or growing a cow or growing chickens. Like, we should be creating ecosystems. Mm-hmm. And that's where farming has kind of, you know, that's where our commodity markets have skewed the farming, because it does become this thing where, like, oh, I'm selling corn, so I'm just going to grow corn. Fucking corn, yeah, for acres and acres. And then you get diseases, you get droughts, you get food that isn't as nutritious, because an ecosystem should be feeding the food. It shouldn't just be one thing. And that's what's been beautiful about this project for me too, is, yeah, that ecosystem of people that have come to this place. You know, I was doing this on my own for quite some time. I mean, I had farmers and I had, you know, kind of sporadically these people that I was talking to and researching, and certainly lots of farmers that came before me who were mentoring me, but they weren't like on my team. Like, we weren't working on the projects together. And so, yeah, this team aspect that we've had out here of like you and Fox and Brent and Heidi, and I mean, so like volunteers, Eric, like Carrie coming in,
even Austin, Dustin,
Chad. Yeah. It really, that's part of like what is amazing about this job and this place is like, yeah, I'm doing the work that I really wanted to do, but the people that have come to it, the space we've created, the kind of the message that we're getting, you know, the relationships we're building in Lockhart, it's just so much more of an ecosystem. And it's, yeah, it's really, really been beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would love to break down the pieces of the ecosystem that we're creating here and how each one, like the role of each one and the impact that it has within the ecosystem.
Okay. What do you want to start with? What's your favorite little microcosm ecosystem that we have?
I would say the bees.
Yeah. The bees have been really fun. Yeah. So we have 6 beehives. We got 3 from Bee Weaver and we got 3 from a local beekeeper in Lockhart, Kenny Mays, shout out. And, yeah, so the bees are pollinators, right? So they're going to be, ultimately, we wouldn't have any of the plants that we have without pollinators. You could plant the seeds, you could water the seeds, you could get all the sunlight on the seeds, but you wouldn't get very far if you didn't have pollinators. And I don't have a ton of past experience with bees, but out there seeing all the bees on all of the food and seeing how many flowers have popped and even the sunflowers like going crazy and stuff that we didn't expect. I think that has a lot to do with the bees.
Yeah. We almost have too many sunflowers. Like there's some spots where it's like, I don't know if like these should be here anymore.
Yeah.
Can't even walk.
And we weren't expecting them to come back that much. I think Chad wasn't even really, I mean, he didn't see it last year, so it was hard for him to know all of the ins and outs of what the land used to be.
So that's a piece that people don't know about. Is that before we started putting together this ranch, the previous owner was growing wild sunflowers out in the field.
Yeah. So there was a seed bank in the soil for sure. So we knew there would be some, but there's just massive amounts. And they are beautiful and they provide a lot of value. And, you know, that's a constant trade-off that you have to make in any ecosystem is like everything is good and too much of it can be bad. Mm-hmm. So what is that line? Where is that, you know, minimum effective dose? And then keeping that and not having an overgrowth. So yeah, I mean, the bees have been fascinating. We've had a lot of, it's been amazing to learn about them. We've had a lot of kind of problem solving. I think the best thing that was, you know, recently exciting to learn is, one of our hives recently after getting it, we were doing a hive check, me and you, that kind of turned into a little bit of a, the attack, but we made it through. We got some bee medicine. We really got to speak the bee language. We realized that the hive was likely missing a queen because what were the reasons? So there was no larva. It was swarming. They were pretty aggressive. We couldn't see any of the larva. And there were these like queen cells that they were making that are a little bit like longer and more, I don't know, popped out, like pronounced on the hive itself. So that's what we determined.
And they do that. They do that when they're missing a queen. They need to make a new queen.
They try to make a new queen. So normally beekeepers have two ways of going about that. They'll buy another queen from a beekeeping company and introduce it to the population. Or you just let nature take its course and you let the bees remake their queen. And I think that's something special that, you know, really speaks to our ethos and speaks to Kyle Kingsbury and just what we're trying to do here is as much as possible, if we can just let nature take its course and heal itself, like we want to do that. We want to cultivate that. So that's what we decided to do. We decided not to buy a new queen. We decided to, take some larva frames from another hive and put them into this hive. And then they'll feed those baby bees royal jelly. And eventually those baby bees will turn into a queen. So that's what we did. And we just got a bee expert to come out here last week and check on our hives to make sure, because we're still just learning. We're learning so much out here. We have some experience, but like there's so much to learn for each of these enterprises. You could be an expert on any one of these things, and we're doing like all five or six of them at a time. So it's impossible to know everything.
Yeah, and it's really necessary to bring experts in to pick their brains and like have them look at what we're doing.
Yeah,
and make sure like they can fill in any gaps that we can't see.
Yeah.
You know, in many ways we have tunnel vision as we're learning some of these things. So yeah, to have somebody that's opened up there's like peripheral senses to whatever it is,
yeah,
is super helpful.
Yeah. So yeah, I think having the bees, you know, they're going to be pollinating all the food for us that we have out here, helping the flowers turn into fruit. And that's potentially a reason why we have so much fruit. You know, it would have been cool to like, who knows what would have happened if we didn't have bees, if we would have as much fruit. Like, we definitely wouldn't.
Yeah, I'm glad we don't have to find out.
Yeah, so that's been amazing. So the bees are gonna pollinate and help everything pop. Eventually next year we're gonna be able to harvest honey, so they'll be providing resources for us. And you know, honey is an amazing resource as well, of just the, like, your immune system, how many, like, all of the things that they're getting in the environment that we're living in, they're like alchemizing that into this amazing magical thing called honey with like the local things around you. So if you think about allergies, or if you think about just getting sick, like things in your environment, if you're eating from your environment, like, you know, the plants are also in the same environment as you. So if there's a disease or a pest or something, like, they have to come up with defenses as well. So when you're eating around you and eating that honey, you're getting the defenses and the things, the enzymes and the bacteria that the plants and the bees are using to defend for themselves, you're getting that as well. So, yeah, honey's magical. We got to have a little bit of a taste because some honeycomb broke off, but we won't really get honey until next year.
It was amazing, you were curious.
It was amazing. And what's the chickens?
We have chickens. I think chickens. We should definitely cover the pond a little bit more.
Okay.
All the food.
Okay.
And plants that we have. We got donkeys.
We got donkeys.
Turkeys.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think what cattle, we're doing exotics. Pretty different.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is like we're trying to think about how nature can just protect itself in all these ways rather than us being kind of the babysitters of all the animals. So the donkeys and the turkeys, while they provide a lot for the land and eventually, you know, we'll probably be able to harvest the turkeys, we ultimately got them so that they could be protectors and to create this whole ecosystem function where they're protecting the chickens. So turkeys are really good. They're a lot more just aware of their surroundings. They're a lot more, we got heritage breed turkeys from Rome Ranch. So they have a little bit higher, just more wild and natural instincts. So they'll be able to protect the chickens. Chickens are, you know, just, they take a lot more care and hands-on. So the turkeys are going to help us protect the chickens. The donkeys are going to help us protect the chickens. We had a raccoon issue. So we had two chickens get lost from a raccoon attack. And since we've had the donkeys, we've had no more raccoons. So that's been really awesome. I can't wait to get the turkeys out there. Yeah, we got some, what do we have now? 36 chickens. So ultimately, we're not rotating them right now, but that is coming in the future. So chicken poop is just a magical fertilizer. It provides a lot of nitrogen to the soil. They eat bugs and pests that might otherwise get into your garden. They'll peck and scratch at the cow manure and eat the bugs from there and help it incorporate to the soil. So I hope we can maybe at some point, maybe next year, but rotate the chickens behind the cows. That would be ultimately like that whole ecosystem functioning. We're going to get cows soon. So the cows are going to help, you know, regenerate the soil. If you're rotating them, they kind of have three parts that people don't think of. So their poop is one thing that is massive fertilizer for the soil. That's really, really helpful. It's like food for soil. But their hooves and that hoof impact on the ground is what breaks up the capped soil and allows water and nutrients to infiltrate the soil. So you need it to be, you need that hoof impact so that they're incorporating all of this organic matter and water and air into the soil to get down into the roots of the plants. And then their mouths, when they're eating the grass, they stimulate that grass to regrow. So if you're not doing anything, if you're just mowing your grass, that's not the same as, you know, all the enzymes in a cow's mouth and the act of literally biting off the grass is going to stimulate that plant differently than if you're just cutting it or mowing it. Those enzymes will stimulate the grass to provide regrowth. So that's what we're going to try to do with the cows. We're going to have...
That's cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah. We're going to have different impacts. Yeah, there's a lot of studies around... I mean, that's what we know about our own, right? Our own mouths are the first place of digestion for us.
Yeah, digestion starts in your mouth.
Yeah.
And like... Especially with water too. I've heard like people talk about like chewing your water.
Yeah.
Where you like put your water into your mouth and you just swish it around a bunch and you get all of that bacteria that's in your mouth that's already starting the digestion process to actually break down your food and break down your water like right from the get-go.
Yeah.
Because if you're just drinking water really quickly or you're just like scarfing down your food, you're not really maximizing all of that bacteria in your mouth that's going to help that digestion process.
Yeah, exactly. And speaking of water on that topic, so, you know, the structure of water and the movement of water is really what makes water be this thing that's alive. And that's something also really exciting that we're doing on the property is there's three ponds already on the property. We excavated the spiral waterway. We currently have one of the ponds connected to the spiral waterway, and that's how we filled the pond. And long term, we want all of the ponds to be connected so that the water is always moving. And that is kind of a principle of permaculture, something that Sep talks about a lot and Chad talks about is like this kind of aquaculture concept. So what are these environments in these ponds and in the water? Obviously, we know we need water just to feed the plants, but the water is also creating this whole ecosystem for fish, for lily pads, for, you know, maybe we'll get some crawdads in there or crawfish, all of these things. And keeping that water moving is what prevents like bacterial buildup and prevents algae buildup and keeps that ecosystem like sustaining on its own. So I'm really excited for us to dive more into aquaculture. We just had a pond expert come out and sort of give us a report of what are all the species that we have, what are the fish that we have, what are the potential algae concerns that we have. And I think getting the water to continuously move is going to be massive for sustaining that ecosystem. And ultimately providing the best water that you can drink, like alive moving water, you know, has all of these properties that just static bottled water and the tap water that we're drinking really doesn't have.
Yeah, it's missing all the information that it gets from moving through the minerals and the rocks.
Yeah, it's going to be mineralized water. So, yeah, I'm stoked for that. What are some other things that we have out here?
So another reason why we're holding water and retaining water is because it serves as a beacon for life. So as long as you can hold the water year after year, it magnifies the amount of life that comes to the water and the structure that we've created and all the food. And like Chad Johnson, for example, on his farm, he was talking about every single year, it's like 10x the amount of nature. Like there's rare birds from Southeast Asia that have flown all the way to his farm in Minnesota because they can just sense like the magnitude of this area and the way that it supports life. He's talking about like rare insects that he's never seen. Mm-hmm. And he's had an insect expert come out and like they've never seen them. And it's just like crazy stuff. Even mushrooms too. He was talking about new species of mushrooms that were never on his farm before. Yeah. That are now here all of a sudden. So when you retain water and create structures like this, it amplifies the amount of life, the amount of opportunities that are going to occur at your farm or wherever you're holding the water.
Yeah. And I think that's something else that, you know, it shows what's possible because a lot of people, you know, we have these boxes and these limitations of like, oh, you can't grow that in that climate. You can't have fruit trees and you can't have these tropical species in, you know, an Arctic climate. And that's something that Sepp is really expert in. He's done these installs in places that people never thought you could grow food in. And now they're these huge food forests that are providing abundant food for the entire like villages and places where they just didn't think it was possible to even grow food.
Yeah, like the Saharan Desert.
Yeah, crazy places. And so that's because like you change the environment and you change the climate when you create these like micro ecosystems. So, what we have out there too, along with the spiral waterway, it's in the middle of these large berms of, kind of like mounded soil where we planted trees. And, the mounds do a variety of things. They provide more surface area to plant more plants. So, you know, we were able to plant trees like on all of the sides of the berms where if it was just flat, that would be like a third of what we would have been able to plant. And they also help create these microclimates where on the inside where the spiral starts, like it's more moist in there. It's more humid. And so those plants, like it's just an entire different microclimate than it is over in the middle of the grassland, right? So the temperature is different. The humidity is different. So the things that can grow are different. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's really opened my eyes. And I think that that's part of showing to people what's possible is like, you can create these microclimates. And as you build up these symbiotic relationships with plants and animals, your environment changes along with it. So the capacity for it to grow different foods, like, is just going to increase. And ultimately, you know, we think of Texas as like really dry, and we think about a lot of other places that are really dry. But when you're looking at total annual rainfall, like, there is rain. We get a significant amount of rain. It's just sporadic. It's not, you know, it's like at one time of the year and then it gets really dry. And that's something that Alan Savory talks a lot about, is this difference between like brittle environments and non-brittle environments. So if you think about like the Pacific Northwest or even the East Coast, where it's really humid, green plants are growing all year round. You don't really have these really dry summers. You don't have, you know, these really cold winters. And so in people's minds, they're just like, oh, you can grow a lot of food over here. It's green all the time. That's easier. And then Texas is a brittle environment, but we get a significant amount of rain. It's just about our capacity to hold that rain.
Yeah, hold and retain the water.
And do something with it. So that's what, you know, ponds will do. That's what digging our spiral waterway will do. And ultimately, that's what the soil is going to be able to do. The soil is going to be storing that water and holding it. And then, you know, think about the economics of that. That's a huge piece for farmers. Like, the water, where's the water? That's the biggest thing. So as much as you can harness the water that you're getting, the rain that's coming down, that's going to just help you in the long run. And it's going to create an entire different microclimate, which has been amazing. I mean, even just walking into that space, like, it feels different.
Yeah. From as you're walking up to the gate, you open the gate, you enter, like, it feels like you walk into a portal. Yeah. Into a completely different world.
Yeah. You are. It's crazy.
It's amazing. It's really hard to describe, especially when you're in it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, life out in Lockhart, and like especially on this ranch and this property, is like way more quiet than life out in Austin.
Mm-hmm.
And just like living out here for a few months, it feels different when you wake up, and it feels different when you go to bed. And then you just notice such a big difference when you're in the city, like night and day.
That was something that really,
it's almost like a culture shock in a way.
It is. And that was something that was like a big light bulb, I think, for me, or just, I really like embodied it more, and it was integrated a lot more. Like, this weekend, I was out at KetoCon in the city, at an event center, tons of people, a lot of input.
Was it the Palmer?
Yeah, I was at the Palmer Event Center. You know, a lot of amazing conversations, a lot of people who are really passionate about shifting health, shifting, environmental health, our own physical health. And all of these amazing conversations about, like, what can we do? How can we shift the food system? How can we do regenerative agriculture? And certainly some of the people that were there are also getting their hands dirty and starting to walk down this agriculture path. But most of them are not. And so being there for the weekend and then coming back here and just being able to have the space and the quiet to integrate all of what happened over the weekend, and to know that, like, we're really doing it. Mm-hmm. Like, all of the conversations that we're having, we are taking action steps and we're implementing it and we're learning and we're sharing that information. I just felt really grateful to be out here, and it felt like, yeah, to be able to experience that contrast, like, so viscerally. I think that it really just brought to life, like, all of the holistic benefits of what being out here is. It gives us that space to, like, process what we're going through and integrate all of the chaos of day to day, and just to be able to, like, be grateful and observe what nature and the universe is providing. And I know that you've kind of been able to experience that, I think. Do you want to talk a little bit about just what you've felt? Because I'm on the agriculture path. So I came out here with the specific intent of, like, really wanting to learn and be on this path. But you kind of came out here for maybe a different reason. Do you want to talk about that a little
bit? I mean, I was living with my mom in Tucson for a few months after traveling, and I just found out about this place in December that there was some things happening in March. I found out about Chad from Kyle, and he really hyped him up, just being like, if there's anybody to learn this type of stuff from, it's him. And I was like, okay, well, I'm not entirely passionate about it, but I know, you know, we got to do a lot of different things within the food system. And even if it's not like the career that I choose or the thing that like I do all out for the rest of my life, this is a great training ground, and it's allowing me to see what's possible when it comes to growing food, retaining water, and creating your own ecosystems within your own land. And it's given me a lot of inspiration towards like what I want to create in the future. Like I would love to create something similar to this, but with all my friends.
Yeah.
And let it be our thing. But yeah. So I came out here with the intention to learn, to show up, see what happens, and get out of my mom's house.
Yeah. Well, I think that that's been beautiful to witness, and it's been really inspiring to have my own journey and to be able to see your journey and everyone else's journey who's out here, of like sort of stepping into a pretty big responsibility.
For sure.
And
yeah, it's crazy how everyone's journey has played out here.
Because
like for me, during my time out here, like my dad passed away. So like this was the place where, when I was back in Texas away from Arizona, I would just come and process and heal and grieve. And there's been a lot of times where I would be doing stuff in the soil and just fucking bawling. And what's crazy is like, before my dad passed, just a few hours before, there was a dragonfly that flew into his doorway. And I know you know this story, but so my sister was there with him, and the dragonfly was there up until like the last moment that he passed away. And then when he took his final breath, my sister looked up into the doorway and the dragonfly was gone. But prior to that, it was there for hours. And my sister told me that story. And around that time, that's when we had like a massive influx of dragonfly species. So yeah, just knowing that and processing my dad's death and like being around all these dragonflies, which now for me symbolizes my dad. Mm-hmm. It's just like, it's been a gift, and I can't even really explain how incredible it has been to like go through something so profound. And you know, like one of the realest rites of passage that you have as a man, you know, like stepping up as like the next in your lineage. Like my dad passed, my uncle was really sick. It's very likely he passes pretty soon too. And then after that, it's me, you know? So to just really sit with that in an environment that is so unique, with so many groundbreaking things happening, and just really decide who I want to be as a man and how I want to show up and how I want to continue my lineage. Like I get to have this be a piece of that. And yeah, super special.
And it's been really beautiful to witness that in you. And I think even if, yeah, agriculture isn't your path, I think it...
it's a part of it.
Yeah, it helped you embody maybe some of those things that you're wrestling with about being the next in your lineage, and just what does it mean to have responsibility and to show up every day? You know, it's like you had the hardest, you got to deal with the hardest, hardest up to now, aspect of the chickens. You know, now we kind of have a really awesome setup. We have these chicken coops that are automatic, that our awesome friend Clint from Fatherhood Farms built for us. So the doors are automatic with sunrise and sunset. But before that, we had to go out every single morning at sunrise by hand, pick up every chicken, put it into the coop. And sometimes they got out, and sometimes there were 8 chickens flying around, and you had to corral them. And it was
sometimes you're trying to grab chickens and the chickens are right next to the bees and you get stung by bees and you're like, I'm just trying to help you, chickens.
Yeah. You're going to get eaten out here. And to work through that and to still show up day after day and to have also that nurturing aspect, that care aspect of like, this animal's life depends on me. Like, I need to be there. We don't get that in many other spaces, especially like at our age. You know, we have jobs and we have other responsibilities, but we don't have a lot of things that are really dependent on us. Or we do, but we don't realize that. We don't step into that. And I think, you know, we've had a unique experience where we've lived together for the last couple months, and that has come through. Like, we take care of each other. Like, you bring me cacao with lavender in it from the garden, and, you know, we'll cook dinner together and stuff. And like, that's a huge piece of what's been beautiful out here, is to really get to embody this aspect of community and true dependence on the people that are around you, because we really are, no matter what. We just have this weird society where we kind of, you know, we buy our things from a store that we have no connection to, and they ship it to us. And we sometimes live in these apartments where, like, the management takes care of things. And there's just not a ton of opportunities where we really get to realize pretty early on and young for our age that, like, we truly are dependent on each other.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, most of us aren't seeing when we go into the grocery store, like, not only the people stocking the grocery store so that it feels like it's full of food, mm-hmm. but those that have, like, packaged all the food before it even got to the grocery store, mm-hmm. and, like, those that drove it to the store, and just, like, the whole lifespan of what it took to get there, mm-hmm. you know, you miss out on that. Mm-hmm. So you don't see that connection between, like, the planet, the sun, the resources, the people, everything that went into it. And it's just like, oh, I'm just grabbing this box of mac and cheese off the shelf, and yeah, you just don't know the full story. Whereas, like, out here, you get to see the full story. When you go to farms, you see the full story. When you're in community, and like, you really realize, like, how much we all are depending on each other in some form. And that's just what continues this ecosystem that is humanity. That's the sauce.
That's the sauce. Yeah. So I think, like, who we become in this process is, like, a huge, it's a rite of passage of its own, doing this farming and showing up every day. And I'm really grateful to have witnessed your journey as well. And just, I think that, you know, the saying of, like, fill your own cup first and then it can overflow, like, I think that that's what we've been focused on doing. And you're a lot more attuned to that when you are, like, living around other people that you're working with. Like, you recognize how you need to take care of yourself so that you can take care of the things that are around you.
Mm-hmm.
And you've done 100%. An amazing job at that. And even when you're going through your own hard time, you know, you were still finding the joy and you were still thinking about the people around you. And so thank you for that.
Yeah, of course. You're welcome. Yeah. Appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in some ways, like, being there for others when you're going through something almost just gives you, like, a pause on the thing that you're going through. It's like, oh, yeah, well, someone else is in need, and, like, now I don't have the space to focus on the fact that my dad just died. Like, all right. It's just, you know, it's nice to have those pauses,
mm-hmm.
not have, like, something big just be in the forefront of your consciousness all the time.
Yeah.
Consumes you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I know it's probably time to wrap up.
Getting close.
I think you need to go. But yeah, just like any final thoughts, and I would love for you to just share with like those listening where they can find you if they feel called to get connected with you.
Yeah. Let me think about final thoughts. I think what we're learning out here is just that it is possible. Like this new paradigm, this new, you know, there's a lot out there in the narrative that makes it seem really unattainable and ungraspable, and like the path ahead is insurmountable.
Mm-hmm.
But you just keep walking forward. Like even there's times when we're here and we're like, we're getting chickens and turkeys and bees all at the same time.
We don't know anything about any of them.
Yeah. And there's moments where like you're freaking out and you're trying to solve the problem. And like, you know, if it was just me, or if like we didn't have each other, it would be easy to get overwhelmed and to want to quit. But then we solve the problem, and now things, you know, some of the things that we have are kind of more streamlined, and now we're moving on to the next thing. And it's just having that faith to like keep moving forward and definitely leaning on each other, and just learning and like not being afraid to try. You know, it's just like anything else. It's like you're gonna fuck up, and mm-hmm. like some things are gonna die, and animals are gonna die, and some plants are gonna die. But ultimately, if you are improving the entire ecosystem, like that's what your focus is. And I think that it just, yeah, I just have a lot more hope for how we can really do this, and that there's so many ways to do it. There's not just one way.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think doing it as locally as possible, getting as many people involved as possible, is really the way to do it. So I'm glad that we have this ethos of collaboration and involving other people and sharing what we're learning. So anybody that has any questions or is curious, you know, we love having volunteers at the farm, so people can come out and get their hands dirty and just see what we're doing. We're going to be hosting more workshops in the future and hopefully be doing a lot more training. So I'm really excited for that. Yeah, you can find me on my Instagram. It's just at Jalene Novotny, JaleneNovotny. And then I have a newsletter where I'm talking all about, you know, farm stuff, hunting, the local farmers that I'm engaged with out here, and you know, just other life tidbits. So that's jalene.substack.com. And then I do have a Shopify store where I sell farm boxes, and I deliver them into the local Austin area. So I'm partnered with Alive and Well right now. So they're a drop site. So you can order it through their website, or you can order it at regenerativerenegade.shopify.com.
All the plugs.
All the plugs.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Jalene. I feel like we're going to do this again.
Yeah.
At some point. And yeah, I love you.
I love you so much.
Yeah. I love that you're in my life and you're one of the first people that I connected with in Fit for Service.
Yeah.
And yeah, I have a feeling we're going to build something like this again together with our own team of Ascenders.
Hell yeah. I love that. Ascenders.
Yeah.
Thank you for being here and doing this with me and stepping up to a massive challenge and responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're welcome. An initiation.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Love.
Thank you again, everyone, for tuning in to this episode of The Line to Mastery. I know it's been about 2 months since I've released a podcast, and yeah, I don't know what the frequency of the podcast is going to be like, but I know it's not dead. And there's a lot of life in me, a lot of life in this podcast, and it'll just continue to grow in whatever form it organically wants to right now. Sending you a lot of love and appreciation. Have an incredible day. Peace.